Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Coverage Podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I am joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. We are a week after the last time we podcasted. Not a lot has happened. We talked on the last podcast about the Colts signing needing to sign a backup quarterback. They've signed Joe Flacco. We can maybe do like a couple minutes on this off the top. Ultimately, this podcast is going to be about the secondary, the Colts' lack of moves in the secondary, and I have a good thought for that. But we can do just a little bit of an intro here on Joe Flacco. I think that a couple of things are important with Flacco. Number one, like somebody that I threw out, Tyler Huntley, the league clearly agrees with Nate that him as a passer is not good, because he had to sign to become Cleveland's third quarterback, essentially, or fourth, competing for their third or fourth quarterback spot. So that, like, the running does not outweigh the passing there. To the league, this is something with free agency. The league tells you what they think of players, and sometimes what they tell you if they think of players affects your view of them. Like I was kind of looking at it more in like a mobility type standpoint. He can do some of the running stuff. The league clearly doesn't think he can throw, and his yards per attempt over his career back that up. So Huntley's in that vein. Tyrod Taylor got quite a bit, right?
Yeah, it was.
I think he got one of the higher backup deals to go to the Jets.
Yeah, pretty nice move for a guy who doesn't have to move his house. Since he's gone from one New York team to the other, he got 2 years, $12 million, with some incentives, which is on the table when you have a quarterback coming off of an Achilles tear. So,
and super old. Some of the guys that we mentioned, I think one of the things that maybe has gotten lost with the backup quarterback discussion is sort of the idea that, you know, can you get a quarterback who's more like Anthony? And the way we've talked about that mostly, and where we've probably been guilty on this podcast of doing it too, but it's just like what he can do with his legs. There's another element of it though that Flacco does fit. And it was in my story. It was in the story I wrote on his signing, but Joe Flacco will throw the ball down the field. That he will push the ball down the field and go for explosive plays. Now, interceptions do come with that sometimes, but I know that, like, something that I've said on here for going all the way back to the middle of the season, there were a lot of times last season that Alec Pierce in particular was open. Now, there are other receivers too, but Pierce is the explosive threat, and that's how they used him. There were a number of times last year that he was open, like not like kind of open, not a step on a guy, open, deep downfield. And Gardner Minshew did not pull the trigger because of his aversion to throwing it down the field. I think the Colts are very grateful to Minshew for what he did in terms of giving them a baseline to get them to help them get to the doorstep of the playoffs. But he was a complete stylistic change from Richardson, and really from Steichen, even more so than Richardson. I think that's the most important part. It's not just about being different than Richardson. It's about being different than Steichen. Steichen dials all that stuff up. He wants explosive plays. I would not be surprised if there was some frustration from the Colts last year with Minshew's reluctance to throw the ball down the field.
Yeah, they seemed prepared to let him walk. Now, maybe they knew that a team like the Raiders was going to dump the kind of money that they did on him and take them out of consideration anyway. But I got that feeling at the combine that they were just kind of ready to go look at a new backup quarterback. And yeah, I think that has something to do with it. You know, Gardner's style, on one hand, like he had experience with Shane. He fit some of the, you know, RPO. He was good at running the RPOs. So there was a little bit of crossover, but I thought he was more schematically, stylistically a fit for Jim Bob Cooter, who does like, you know, high levels of completions, shorter depths of target. That was sort of the transition he had made in Detroit with Matthew Stafford back when Stafford was just sort of a sling the ball down the field kind of guy. And the interesting thing is they're trying to find this balance where you can kind of have both. You can be explosive, but you can complete, you know, more than eight passes a game too by finding some of the easy wins that kind of work like a pseudo run game out of the slot. That's more the Jim Bob Cooter stuff. So Joe Flacco is a dramatic shift away from Gardner Minshew, where he is going to miss some throws sometimes. He's going to attempt throws that are lower percentage. He's going to sometimes turn it over. He'll thread the needle. He'll take the gamble at maybe not the perfect time, but that's part of the business of the way he plays, which last year produced 7.9 yards an attempt, 323 yards a game for a Browns team that really only had two receivers that scared people, and David Njoku and Amari Cooper, and got them to the playoffs that way. And that's where, yeah, it's interesting because, like, I know, I'm sure the Colts fans see that they're signing a 39-year-old quarterback. You have flashes of the last few old quarterbacks they've had, which are not guys with arm strength who are like protect the ball or try to, even if it didn't always work with Matt Ryan. Joe Flacco absolutely has that live arm still. It is electric, unless it starts to fall off. And that is the one risk that is out there, is that you're judging him based on what he was still, even if it was just last season. He is 39, so we don't know when that's, you know, eventually Father Time always wins. But he hasn't dealt with any injuries. That's usually the thing that gets the ball rolling on that. And so it is an interesting fit where now they clearly want to get more explosive with Anthony coming back in. They talked a lot about that. Some of that's obviously going to come in the run game with him and Jonathan Taylor, but it's going to come in the pass game too with Alec Pierce. Some more stuff I know they want to do with Josh Downs. And even Michael Pittman Jr. make it more than just, you know, catches really underneath. He can be more of a jump ball guy down the field on extended plays. So Joe Flacco is going to hit all those levels, and creates a very interesting quarterback room now, where you have one guy who started like 180 more games than Anthony, who's 18 years older. He's old enough to where Anthony's got his first kid on the way. Joe could be that kid's grandpa. That's the kind of scenario we have here, but in some ways that's a good fit too, because I still think of Anthony, even though there's a lot of reason to be excited for him, I still think of him mostly as a rookie quarterback as far as what he's going to go through next season, game to game. I do think, as much as I think he will help them and add to that explosiveness, there's going to be some moments that feel like rookie moments because he didn't have enough of a rookie season to go through that. It always helps to have a veteran quarterback who knows the league, who knows the game, who knows what teams are trying to do, and has also been in some of those situations. Joe Flacco was a first-round pick, you know, who ended up, you know, he's gone to the heights that Anthony eventually wants to go to as far as, you know, winning a Super Bowl, winning Super Bowl MVP. So I think it's a sensible move. It's just there is a little bit of risk because he's 39, and at what point does that show up? But as far as the guy they got, if they get the guy they got that Cleveland got last year, I think it's a really good move.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other thing is just the familiarity aspect. People forget this, but Joe Flacco was with Shane Steichen for an offensive install, for them developing Jalen Hurts as a starter. He got traded halfway through the 2021 season to the Jets because the Jets, as always, were desperate for a quarterback because of injuries. But, you know, the familiarity there is there for Steichen. They also know that between Hurts and Lamar Jackson, he's worked with a young quarterback before. They've got stuff on that. It's I could see arguments for wanting other players as the backup quarterback. I think that, you know, from a familiarity standpoint, I think that that's probably underrated when it comes to the backup quarterback, because teams don't plan going in for the backup to play the entire season. You know, that's not the way you plan your season out. So I think the familiarity for a coach is very helpful there in terms of the backup quarterback, and or at least coaches, whether or not it's helpful, the coaches want it. The coaches would rather have a quantity they know in that room as the backup quarterback than a quantity they don't.
Yeah, because it matters in terms of the plays you're going to call and trust them with, but also that personality presence in that room is pretty big. It's a pretty big influence on a young quarterback, and they want to trust that guy. That was a big reason I think Gardner was here, is they kind of knew what they were getting. And that, Joe, like for reasons you said, is similar to that. He's also a very known commodity for how long he's played. Yeah, the one thing that they sacrificed would be the mobility aspect. And we, you know, Shane kind of laid out that he could go either way with it. That's what they hired Shane initially, because he can coach quarterbacks who are mobile or quarterbacks who are old like Phillip Rivers, or quarterbacks who are, you know, big time throwers down the field like Justin Herbert. And he showed that versatility last year just by going ping-ponging from Anthony to Gardner. And so there's going to be a little bit of that if it goes from Anthony to Joe, who's obviously not going to ever do a design run unless it's a quarterback sneak, maybe. That's where, like, Tyrod Taylor to me was the perfect option.
Why are you crushing my dreams?
Of a design quarterback run with Flacco?
I mean, like, I can tell you right now that if there's a scenario that involves Joe Flacco taking a zone read 3 yards for a touchdown, it will absolutely lead Three Football Things That Gave Me Joy next season.
Yeah, and I bet he won't fall a yard short of the first down if he does that too, which is an improvement. Hey, this is in your wheelhouse. I mean, you're the backup center now, is what I saw.
Yes.
You can just call the shots, the offensive meeting, and make that happen.
A lot of podcast listeners have probably already seen this on social media, but just for those who haven't, what Nate is referencing is that so I broke that the Colts were bringing back Danny Pinter, and Pro Football Talk. The person who wrote it is a Hall of Famer. I don't want to like take too many shots at them. But they wrote a story where the Colts had signed Pinter, and that I had, as reported by me, but then they got my name and Pinter's name mixed up for the rest of the story. And so for the rest of the story, it was about all the snaps that Erickson had played and me being 27. I think everyone was missing the real thing. For me, it was not that I was playing center for the Colts or suddenly earning an NFL contract. Getting 10 years of youth back, that was the big one for me. Like, I couldn't get past that. I wanted the 27-year-old Joel. Like, there's my hamstrings were so much better at 27 than they are now. Like, that part was really getting – I was really enticed by that idea.
Yeah, and if I ever make an old joke to you again, you can just bring that up. I mean, I'm a 27-year-old pro athlete, so
right. Technically, I'm younger than you now.
Yeah, I am not. I'm not on an NFL roster either, even though very close. There is a Nate Adkins.
You are close. You're one letter off.
And I have people tweet me about once a month, thinking I'm that person. So we're close enough. This is like the cover two, except we both play offense now. I don't know how that's going to work, but
it's fair. The fans who pointed out that I need to bulk up, that's fair. That's very fair. I'm well under my playing weight at this point.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see you in one-on-ones against DeForest Buckner this summer. That should be. You need to get to the gym now.
Well, I mean, just the gym. I got to be eating some peanut butter sandwiches. I'm well below my playing weight at this point. For it to play backup center to Ryan to compete with Wesley French for the backup job at center. I think the most that where we're going to spend most of the time on this podcast is the secondary. The Colts have not made any
moves. Oh, I thought you were going to say on the signing of Danny Pinter. I thought that was
the 10th Colt that has been brought back this offseason. Danny Pinter, 10 out of 15 with one still outstanding. And the one that's still outstanding is actually a good segue into what we're going to talk about here, because mm-hmm. it's Julian Blackman. Whatever you think of Julian Blackman, and we'll probably get into this in a little bit, but whatever you think of Julian Blackman, he was your starting strong safety. Without him being re-signed, there is a there's an enormous hole. But the way I want to think about, because I think you and I have said enough on this podcast that we thought they had to make some moves, and specifically make moves in the secondary. I thought of something yesterday that I think kind of crystallizes this for me. I would love, if it's me, I think the Colts need a signing that raises their ceiling as a secondary. Like that's a big name. That's like a Justin Simmons, you know, somebody like that. Like I think they need that type of player to raise the ceiling of their defense and of the team as a whole. But at the bare minimum, they need to do something that raises the floor of the secondary. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's kind of what we talked about in the last podcast about having pivots. Like if they were to go to the draft and take someone like Terron Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell, like what if it doesn't work right out of the gates? What if Juju Brents isn't healthy enough next season? Like, where do you go to if this stuff doesn't work? That's where, like, a couple years ago they did really well with that in a vacuum, even though the rest of that offseason was a mess. But Rodney McLeod was a gorgeous pivot to what they did at safety when they trade up for Nick Cross. They saw him as a future first-round player, but he was super young. He's the youngest player in the NFL. We then came to find out he was too young and not ready. But they late in free agency spent very little money on Rodney McLeod, who's a safety that the league kind of thought maybe you don't have much left after an injury. And he was awesome. He was absolutely the leader for that secondary. Again, nothing else really came together that season for them, but that's the kind of move that can help. Like, just that's the thing, is it doesn't have to be L'Jarius Sneed, which I know we'll get into as well, but there's, with all this stuff, like we go through their offseason right now, and in certain moments I can, in a vacuum, if you just look at why they did or didn't do a certain move, it makes sense. But what I keep coming back to now that more time's going on is like, okay, so then what's the plan B? What's the other move? Like, the option can't be that didn't work, so we're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And that's the conversation that's going to start happening with them. The more that these DBs come off the market, the more that they wait, the more that we find out they're not actually that interested in L'Jarius Sneed. Like, at some point we need to hear that they are interested in somebody that's going to move the needle for the secondary, either the floor, like multiple signings of the Rodney McLeod type, I think they could use. Even bringing back Julian Blackman, that would help a lot with the floor, or the ceiling, like that big kind of ceiling raising move. Something there has to come together. Because right now, I look at the secondary as it stands right now, and again, this can change, and it needs to. But as of right now, even if they spend a first round pick on a cornerback, I don't know that they have a floor or a ceiling that I'm very impressed with in the secondary. Because I don't think, as good as Kenny Moore is, and I like that move for them, if you're going to say that, like, our floor and our ceiling is tied to our nickel corner and that's it, like, it's not going to be enough in the NFL, especially the AFC.
Well, and to your point about drafting somebody, there were 5 cornerbacks taken in the first round last year. 3 of those cornerbacks, is it 5 or 6? I'm missing somebody in the top 10. I might have skipped past the top 10 too fast because the Colts don't have a top 10 pick. Nope, it was just 5. 5 corners were taken in the first round last year. 3 of those players played starter snaps. Devin Witherspoon, who made the Pro Bowl, I believe. Yep, Devin Witherspoon, but he was the 5th pick in the draft. Devin Witherspoon, Deontay Banks in New York played 844 snaps. Joey Porter Jr. started 11 games for the Steelers. But the guys in the middle, Emmanuel Forbes in Washington, Christian Gonzalez in New England, I mean, those guys played, but they were more rotational guys than they were, you know, guys that start and make an enormous impact on, like I was saying, the ceiling of your team. And the floor of it, in terms of the floor of it, maybe a draft pick raises it a little bit, but there's a chance that it doesn't, you know? I think if you start talking about the floor for this secondary as it's assembled right now, as we're talking about it on Wednesday the 20th, like, okay, let's just lay it out. Kenny plays well. Like, we're going to throw injury out of this because you can't necessarily – we're going to have to talk a little bit about injury, but, like, we're going to try to throw out, like, this assuming players will get hurt. So say Kenny plays well. You're expecting Kenny to play well. Well, what if you get the same level of play from Rodney Thomas and Nick Cross, again, at both safety positions? Because right now, as the roster's constructed, Cross moves over to strong safety. You get the same level of inconsistency there. You get the back end of the season of Jalen Jones. And then you get some of Juju Brent's worst moments. And Dallas Flowers doesn't quite have the same explosion coming off of a torn Achilles, which is like, that's very typical for an Achilles tear. That's not a good scenario for the Colts. That's a bad floor.
Yeah, it's a really bad floor. And you could, like, just think about it on floor. I think about that more the safety position, is that if they had really good safety play and we're here stressed about the corners, you know, there's ways that they can play conservatively. Lots of zone coverage, which they play a lot anyway. Maybe too high safeties. Like, there's ways to survive some of that. But if you don't have safeties, and you have a rookie outside corner and a second-year outside corner that's not a lot further than a rookie, because Juju Brent's only made it through 9 games last year. I mean, there's no floor to that. There's just all teams have to do all teams have to do is say, all right, Kenny Moore's in the slot, so we're not throwing there, and we're just going to torch you. And, like, you know, they have a good pass rush, but even if they had, like, the Broncos pass rush the year they won the Super Bowl, that wouldn't, like, that's not even enough of a floor if you have this many secondary issues. And we saw that last year because they finished top 5 in sacks, and yet there were moments against good quarterbacks that they just didn't even have a prayer out there. And I think they were a better secondary last year than they are right now because they had Julian Blackmon, and right now they don't. And so safety is a very – that's a position that, like I could live with the idea of drafting a first-round corner if you had two really experienced good safeties. But right now they have told us they don't really believe in either one because Nick Cross started 2 games, then got benched his rookie year, was benched all the way last year until late in the season. But they trusted him as a free safety late in the season. When Julian Blackmon went down, they didn't want to move him to strong safety. They instead moved Ronnie Harrison back to strong safety after he'd been a linebacker all year. So that tells you they didn't trust to play Roddy Thomas anymore either. They wanted to play a converted linebacker over him. But the plan, and they just signed Ronnie Harrison back, and maybe they could, I don't know exactly what position he's going to back up, safety, linebacker, maybe both. But you can't tell me that that is the plan either, because then why did you spend all year asking him to play linebacker if you thought he was a spring strong safety? Like, nothing they're doing right now can convince me that the plan going in was, these are our starters and we just thought that was what it should be. Instead, it looks like maybe you're not getting the guys you thought you would. I mean, there's a lot of safeties out there, so I assume they're still good safeties on the market. They're clearly not getting the deals they thought they would. Maybe the Colts thought they could get them for cheaper. Maybe they still will. But if they roll into next season with the safety room as it is right now, they're just going to tell us through how they played late in the year, how they use these guys late in the year, the things they've said, the moves they've made or not made, that they just whiffed at that position. And it's not a good place to be in, because that's the floor of, if you have horrible safety play, to me, it almost doesn't matter what else you do at any other level of the defense. It's going to come in the playoffs.
At the baseline, you have to have consistent safety play and that you know where they're going to be. Because, like, one of the reasons that so many safeties have moved on this year, people are saying, like, you know, at least this is what I've been reading, is, you know, teams are playing umbrella coverages more. They're playing back. They're putting less on, like, the individual safety. So some teams are evaluating that and saying we don't need to be as good there because we're gonna drop them both back. But the problem with the Colts was last year, they couldn't count on their guys to stay in the umbrella or the shell when they needed to. And And that throws off everything. I mean, Shane Steichen's goal is to eliminate explosive plays. That is a big issue. I think one of the things that's left here is it is still a week into free agency. I know it feels like everyone is gone, but you kind of just touched on this. There are still guys. There are still guys available out there. And it's actually very Chris Ballard-y. Is that a word? Ballard-y?
Sure.
Chris Ballard-like. I like Ballard-y better. It's funner, more fun to say. Yeah. Very Ballard-y to wait until, you know, the weeks following the opening of free agency to maybe make signings, just to remind people, just a couple off the top of my head. Stephon Gilmore, you've already mentioned Roddy McLeod. TJ Carey was a, like, kind of McLeod-like signing the first year that he was here, where they picked him up for essentially the minimum or a little more than the minimum, and he had a really good season for them his first year in Indianapolis. And then Xavier Rhodes is another one where they – kind of a big name who had coming off some bad years was really good for them his first year in Indianapolis as a veteran corner. So, like, they have done – this is done work. Like, this work has been done well, you know. But, like – and there are still guys out there. So I think that's one of the things is – well, the temptation is to evaluate everything right now and say – honestly, not even that Chris Ballard is the same Chris Ballard, but this would be the least, this would be firmly in one of the least active free agencies if it stops today. If it was done today and everyone was gone and we're not looking at any other signings, this wouldn't just be like normal Ballard. This would be probably in there with the 2019 offseason. Was kind of like this. I don't have all of them in front of me, but there he usually has made a couple. He usually makes a couple of signings that either replace holes or upgrades in some way. Those haven't really happened. He's basically just filled holes so far. And so, like, I don't know. I keep thinking that some of these available veteran defensive backs, like, two of them are going to end up in a Colts uniform. I don't know when, but it just feels like they have to, right?
They better. I mean, I could see a world where, yeah, you think at the very least one safety. I just don't know how it squares with anything else they've said or done at that position. And it's not a good safety class in the draft. Even if you want to rely on a rookie, maybe cornerback is still, you know, maybe they fell in love with that position in the first round, and that's still what they want to do. But, it feels like last year in the secondary where they just let – I mean, they brought Kenny Moore back this year, so that's a little different. But for the most part, last year, Roddy McLeod, Stephon Gilmore didn't want to be here anymore. They said, okay. And they just went with draft picks and young guys they had and said, work it out. And we hit them on it for sure. But also understood that it felt like they were doing that somewhat intentionally because they thought it was going to be a learning year all around with Anthony Richardson, so they just went into the youth movement. This year, if they're saying the things that they're saying, you know, the need to get more explosive and limit explosive plays on both sides of the ball has been Shane Steichen's talking point. Chris Ballard's talked about how you have the quarterback on a rookie deal. It opens up a lot of flexibility for you to do things in the offseason. Right before they drafted Anthony Richardson, Jim Irsay said, the money will be spent with the rookie quarterback. You get all these savings and we're going to spend it. And at some point, I've got to see it, man. Like, you can talk about this stuff, but they're doing the same things they've always done, which is bringing back your own guys. And there's something to be said for that. That's good in a lot of ways. Like, a lot of these guys are bringing back, at least the ones they're giving money to, earned it. Or, you know, they're players you don't want to live without. It is a sign of a good drafting organization to do that. But I understand the criticism that fans have right now as it stands here today, which is you're just rolling back the same team as last year, but you're paying it a lot more. And that's not taking advantage of the quarterback on the rookie contract. The way that, for example, the Texans are, who went out and got Daniil Hunter, who went out and signed Danico Autry, try and take their pass rush to that next level because they saw – flashes from CJ, which were better, more sustainable, more believable than anything the Colts have seen yet, because he played the full season. He was Offensive Rookie of the Year. It won the AFC South, and it won a playoff game. Those last two things are, this regime's never won a division title. They've won one playoff game. So even though in 1 year the Texans matched that kind of success, they're saying, like, we need to take another step. We're going to go out there and beef up that pass rush and get Danielle Hunter and guarantee his full contract. And I understand people wanting the Colts to show some of that same pulse, and maybe they will. But so far, they're not doing it. They're not showing enough of those signs, and that ties into the LeJarius Sneed stuff, if we want to go there yet.
We can get there. I think one thing, like, really in terms of, like, bringing back the same team but paying it more, they're really just paying, what, Michael Pittman and Zaire Franklin a lot more? Tyquan Lewis? Yeah. Like, yeah. Grover Stewart and Kenny Moore signed almost exactly the same deal they just had when you account for, like, the inflation, or a little bit less than that when you account for the rise in the salary cap. So, like, and I haven't seen every deal yet, but I'm assuming that some of these are on the back end are minimum deals. Like, it's really just a couple of guys got raises, and then they just brought – it seems to be that a couple of guys got big raises. Pittman's raise is obviously an enormous one. Zaire Franklin's is fairly significant. But for the most part, like, they're just bringing back guys on pretty affordable deals, you know? Like, in terms of where they were last year, it's outside of Pittman and Franklin. And Tyquan's given where his was, because he signed a couple of – the last 2 years, he's been on deals that were under or around $2.5 million. So moving up to something substantially more than that is a raise. But, like – yeah, I was just thinking, like, some of their biggest signings, like, you can count it as a big signing, but you just replaced the contract that you already had for that same player. So, yeah. We can get into the LeJarius Sneed thing. I think this is one of the players that I think most people would think of as clearly raising the ceiling. He's been very good for the Chiefs. If you watch the Chiefs in the playoffs or in the regular season, you saw how that helped the defense, helped Kansas City's defense. They could do a lot of things because they could trust Sneed and McDuffie and that secondary in terms of playing them in man-to-man coverage if they were blitzing. Steve Spagnuolo's blitzes in the Super Bowl were pretty good. and other rounds were pretty darn good too, but you can't do that as much if you don't have the corners who can cover. The hardest part with addressing the LeJarius Sneed thing is, like, I know most of you are aware that there was speculation about, there were reports that a deal had been done. By the time we're taping this, that's kind of all been litigated. I'm trying to decide how much should we say here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to get into it because I wrote about it a little bit just because I was doing these 20 thoughts in the free agency class. I was already working on that anyway, a thought on every guy. And then right as I'm, like, ready to file that, that's when the weekend got very weird with a lot of rumors and like you said, reports in some ways about LeJarius Sneed. So I think the main takeaway here is just obviously you guys know the deal didn't happen. That's nothing new. I should tell you about how, at the very least, you know, it was not a deal that was close. It's something – you know, we both have learned as well is that it was never remotely close to a deal. The easiest, safest way I can describe it is that it's the Colts. I'm not saying that they're out or they couldn't land Sneed because as long as he's out there and they have a need, they should monitor it. And I think they will, but they're not some front runner for him. It's just been really exaggerated. Anything out there about how close they were or how they're in the front or they're, like, gunning for them, that's just not accurate. And really,
I also think if we're talking about on the podcast, I think I can say this. There is some thought out there that all of our reporting is from the Colt side only. That's not true. I would say that one of the reasons this weekend when things blew up was that one of the things is like, I try not to put out a ton of stuff that's not hard fact. Like, you'll see me report on a visit. You'll see me report on a signing. I try not to do the interest stuff as much because it's hard to gauge what that means in reality. But I think I can say this. I have been in contact with people from Snead's camp for 2 weeks, basically. I never got the sense from them at any point that there was anything more than a holding pattern with him and the Chiefs. I think that's the way we'll put it. Including that, like, this, that was obviously, like, there was reporting done on that the night before things supposedly blew up, the night after. Like, you don't want to say too much, but, like, I asked all the relevant questions. I never, ever got that sense. So it's not just like Nate and I have sources on the Colts side. I also have at least one source in Snead on, like, who knows Snead side of things. And yeah, like, the way it's been talked about online, the way it's been talked about in some corners of online, it's just never been described to me that way, even remotely. It's much closer to what Adam Schefter said on Pat McAfee's show when he said that they've not had talks about it.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Adam Schefter, unlike us, is not just covering the Indianapolis Colts. He's covering the whole league. You just look at the situation. It's very clearly a holding pattern where there are teams moving on from Legarius Sneed. You have a couple of the teams have been reported in there. Matt Venderami of Sports Illustrated put this out there that the Lions and Falcons were in the mix, and he's got good sourcing to know this. The Lions made a trade for another cornerback. They went for Carlton Davis of the Buccaneers, extended him, paid him a deal at $14.5 million a year. So that showed, like, there's a cost element to them that they decided, even though I think everyone would agree that Legarius Sneed is more accomplished than Carlton Davis, that was a deal where they agreed to the costs of it, both the contract and what they had to give up in draft capital. The Falcons, you know, I don't know if they've taken themselves out of the secondary market, but they spent $1 bazillion to get Kirk Cousins. Like, they decided that cost was the swing they were ready to take. This thing always comes down to cost. Like, they say in the NFL, like, you don't trade players, you trade contracts. And the interesting thing with Legarius Sneed is he needs a new deal for a team to want to give up a pick that's anything higher than just like something late on day three. If you're going to give up a day two pick or better, you want that player to sign an extension. He's currently on a franchise tag that pays him $19 million this year. And I think what maybe has been not talked enough about with this, maybe even something the Chiefs didn't entirely anticipate, is like, they passed all the leverage in the world to Legarius Sneed with that franchise tag. Because it's $19 million fully guaranteed to play this year. That ties him with Marshawn Lattimore, Trevon Diggs, Marlon Humphrey as a top five cornerback in the league for this season. To play, and this is the worst case scenario for him, is he's going to play for $19 million this year to play for Steve Spagnuolo with Chris Jones rushing the passer, with Andy Reid calling plays for Patrick Mahomes for a team that's won two Super Bowls with him there. And then a year from now, Legarius Sneed, you know, he'll be older. And that's one of the conversations I think that's a little bit a part of it. He's 27, but still, if he turns 28 next year, he'll be $19 million richer. He may have another Super Bowl, but the tag will go up and he'll be in the spot again. So I think from his camp, and I know you're talking to people in his camp more than I am, I'm looking at this situation just like the spot that he's in. If people are wondering kind of why these things can take so long, is that he's in no rush to do anything. Like, he's not like the free agents out there who could at some point give in because the musical chairs are disappearing. He has a chair and it's a gorgeous one, doing what he's already been doing. And he had a charity event where he came out and he said, Kansas City's where I want to be. It's where players want to be all the time. Hollywood Brown just signed a 1-year deal for $7 million plus incentives to play there. when he could have been one of the best receivers on a market that's paying receivers like crazy. But that's a little different because it's a guy whose production will be boosted by Patrick Mahomes. But that Patrick Mahomes effect is just playing into this, I think, in a way that that all of a sudden makes this whole cost discussion with Legere Sneed very complicated, where any team trading for him is weighing two things. Like, a lot of people talk about this, I think, want to make it about, you know, what's the holdup? Is it Kansas City and the draft picks they want? Is it Legere Sneed and the contract? Both of those things are kind of working into this at the same time, where any team trading for him is weighing both of those. For example, like, the Bears just extended Jalen Johnson for $19 million a year, paid him a lot of money over 4 years, but they didn't give up a draft pick to do it. And Jalen Johnson is 3 years younger than Legere Sneed, and he just was a second-team All-Pro, which Legere Sneed has not been yet. Legere Sneed's done more in the postseason, but it's just Legere Sneed has every right now to shoot a super high bar if he wants to, because at least right now, where there's really no rush at all, and he's going to get $19 million a year here, where a lot of extensions would presumably lower that amount, you know, give him security multiple years. But, you know, does he want to make less than $19 million this year? That's one of the questions out there. So you can just see where this becomes a holding pattern because he is in such a wonderful place. It'd be very different if he was in a situation that he just didn't want to be in. You think about, like, when Josh Jacobs got tagged by the Raiders, totally different situation because it's a running back. But, like, that was a mess of a situation. He was open to a trade. At the time, like, that sometimes you give in to get out of something like that, or if the deal is going to pay you more. But neither of those are really easy solutions out there right now, and I think that's why this can become a holding pattern. You think about with the Colts, why would they maybe be not as, like, people thought they'd be firm front runners? They don't win bidding wars, guys. that's like when you add up the total cost of a contract and a draft pick, if it becomes a steep thing, it's just not in their nature to win bidding wars. I don't know if a single one that they've won, true bidding war with multiple teams and just an overpay. The closest you could probably see was Carson Wentz, which ultimately, I think, different topic. I think they mostly bid against themselves there. But it's just kind of the way that this ends up going, where Chris Ballard is, this is a very cost-oriented franchise. And if they think the costs are too high, they're not going to be as interested.
My understanding is that Sneed's camp feels like the Chiefs aren't super motivated right now. I've talked to some people in the league who think that Carolina just decided to get rid of Brian Burns, basically. And that's why the compensation was a second and a fifth for an edge rusher. It doesn't, at least from who I've talked to, like, it doesn't sound like that they feel like the Chiefs are in that. Well, I mean, and it's backed up by the fact that he hasn't been moved in the first 7 days of free agency. So I don't know the Chiefs' exact cap situation off the top of my head. They can't be under, or they can't be like in a place where they have to trade him to get under the cap, because they would have had to do that before the start of the league year, not after. You can't be over the cap after the start of the league year. So
currently listed as $7.6 million in cap space. And they get to go to the bank of Patrick Mahomes on that level too.
Yeah, they opened up $21 million or something like that when they restructured his contract. So that's some of the stuff we've heard. Again, like, one of the reasons that we didn't really do anything with it right away is just being frank, like, our information was the opposite. And I don't necessarily know that you write something every time something goes out there. He's a good corner. I want to ask you about this. I have not looked into it enough. It was suggested somewhere yesterday that he has medical issues, that there's some physical check or something with Sneed. Yeah. That's not good. Have you looked into that at all?
I haven't looked into that. I have seen those whispers too. That's interesting, because it's like, I mean, any trade would be contingent upon a player passing a physical. So I'm wondering I'm just curious how teams would have medical concerns before they've met with him. if it's not based on an injury that happened on the field, because it, I mean, he played 16 regular season games and all four playoff games. I don't know. That's what's been hard to, it's easier with some players where we know there is an injury, he's coming off such and such, but if there is, I'm curious like how teams have become concerned about that. If they haven't gotten to meet him.
That's the thing, is like throwing that out there. Like you don't necessarily know that stuff. Although there's been some reporting. This is not Colts related, but it's like Albert Breer reported this morning that Chase Young, who just signed a very, very like super heavily playing time incentive laden contract in New Orleans, that he has a neck issue that like the Bears were aware of and didn't want to trade for him. The Niners were okay with. Like, there's a part of that that makes me wonder, like, how do they know?
Yeah, I've always been very curious about that. One thing I want to say about Snead, just so we can make sure this is out there. And you alluded to this about what's hard about reporting on interest. Things change. Like, this situation can change too. Like, right now it's been a holding pattern. It's pretty easy to see that teams are moving on from whatever the cost is, or the Chiefs are not willing to move him. One of these things isn't coming, but like eventually someone can give in, and a lot of situations they do. You'll see this with free agency. Someone will eventually give in. So it's certainly possible that at some point, either the Chiefs come back and they're like, you know what, we'll take a lot less draft picks because we just want the cap space. Or Snead's camp could come back and say, you know what, we really do want the multi-year deal. We're not going to mess around anymore. And you could be a team that was not interested at the cost before, and now you are. And that's why it's always hard for us to come out and say, are they interested? Are they in? Are they not? These things are very fluid. It's why we try to be careful with like our moves going to happen before they happen. Like, it's just kind of hard to read into. So it's just like, I'm not making any declarative statements about like Legere Sneed will not be a Colt, but just as of right now, it certainly seems unlikely. It seems unlikely based on just what we found out in what we know about the franchise and all that other stuff. I know it's surprising because, and this kind of is the main reason I want to bring Legere Sneed up, is that, again, in a vacuum, I can understand why you could have some questions about just how much do you give up contract and draft picks for a guy who is obviously very good, but he's going to be 28. We don't know if there's medical concerns or not, but he's going to be 28, and though he's been very good, he's not been like an all-pro player. And specifically to the Colts, like one of the big values I think to Legere Sneed is moving him all around. And now they've got the slot manned by Kenny Moore. So like you can understand like a lot of things they do or don't do, why they arrive to a certain feeling on it. But it is another example then of them not being aggressive for an option that's out there. And I'm just curious, like, when's that going to change? Like, when are they going to be the team that's like, you know what? We want Justin Simmons, or we want Quandre Diggs. Kendall Fuller was a guy I had thrown out there. He ended up, the deal he signed in Miami convinces me, and I don't have info on this, but I just have to believe he wanted to live in South Beach for what he signed for as a clear top option. That's Kendall Fuller, who just signed with the Dolphins. I'm trying to remember what it was.
2 years, $16.5 million.
Yeah.
2 years, $16.5 million, which is not very much.
No, it's not. And
for a starting corner who's been very good the last couple of years.
You know, but Miami's been a place corners have flocked to for a long time. It's actually why now that move happened, I actually think Xavien Howard is a guy Colts should look into a little bit more, he feels a little like Xavier Rhodes when they signed him.
Yeah, very Xavier Rhodes feeling.
Yeah. Like, is he? He's not the all-pro he was a couple years ago, I'm sure, but like his numbers were still pretty solid last year. Pretty good player. And you know, you talk about experience, 99 starts in the league. He has started at least a couple playoff games. He's only a year removed from a Pro Bowl berth too. Although I don't know, based on recent Pro Bowl selections, how much we should weigh that part of it. But yeah, it's just each time a guy goes by, we find out that the Colts either weren't – maybe they were interested. They weren't interested enough to get the deal done. And I'm just curious, at what point are they going to show us, like, you know what, enough's enough. We're going to take our swing here. It doesn't even have to be the biggest swing, but, like, you need starters in that secondary who have experience. And if they don't get that, I'm just going to feel like they whiffed. So I'm curious to see how they rectify that.
The most,
which maybe that brings recent, us.
Yeah. Well, I want to do Howard and Simmons real quick.
Okay.
The one piece of information that I have on, the only thing I have on Howard is what he said himself. He went on the OG's podcast. Not entirely sure what that is. Well, I know what a podcast is. I'm not entirely sure like who runs it and all that stuff. He said, I guess today, I'd rather take a pay cut to go to a team that's going to go further in the playoffs. I've got my money and stuff like that. I'm to the point where how much money do you really need? So it sounds like Xavier Howard wants a ring.
Hmm.
You know, he says, my goal is, this is another direct quote from him from this podcast. My goal is always to win a Super Bowl. Don't let the money get in the way of winning a Super Bowl. Some people get paid. Some people win a Super Bowl. Some people do both. You do both. You're different. I want to be different, but I want to win a Super Bowl now. I've already been paid. Now a Super Bowl is what I'm looking forward to. So that's what Xavier Howard wants. Xavier Howard wants someone he feels like is going to go deep in. This is where Stephon Gilmore was a couple years ago and is now too. Is like he joined the Colts. He took a long time to sign, in part because he was looking for the right situation. He joined the Colts because he felt like it was the right situation. It ended up being a terrible bet. And he ended up with the Cowboys last year. But that's what Xavier Howard wants. I haven't seen really a ton of much of anything on Justin Simmons.
Yeah, it's been hard with him and Quandre Diggs. It's been kind of quiet. Because both of them could be, you know, those are also players that have been paid a pretty good amount, at least. Quandre Diggs made $51 million in his career. So maybe not quite as much as Xavier Howard. He's at like $86 million. Justin Simmons made $62 million. So, I don't know. Those guys have not made as much as Xavier, so maybe that's still front of mind to them. But, I mean, like Justin – both of those guys, Justin Simmons and Quandre Diggs, are like big-time vocal team leader, team captain type people. And so those type of players tend to value, you know, the situation, the team, the culture, the ability to go win. We've seen Quandre Diggs tweet, you know, the googly eyes at Zaire Franklin about the Colts. So it seems reasonable to believe that that's, you know, an open possibility. And just to touch on it, since you brought up Stephon Gilmore, I've not included him on any lists, or I think that's maybe the first time we've brought him up, because he is a free agent right now. And he played pretty well last year for Dallas. I've seen some fans want a reunion. I'm just going to say, I find that incredibly unlikely from his perspective, is that he, for exactly what you said, 2 years ago was trying to maximize the chance to win in what is sort of the later stages of his career. I think he's like 33 now. It didn't work at all here. So he asked for the trade out to Dallas, which to him was another opportunity to do that. And they went to the playoffs. Like, the Colts had their shot at that once already. And things are a lot different. And they've done a lot of things to correct that. That's great. But, like, they had one shot with Stephon Gilmore, I think, to sell him on that. And it went so crazy that I would just be surprised if that is an option to him. But that's kind of why I've not talked about him as much as some others. These other guys, though, like, they don't have to work through – like, they didn't have that experience with the Colts. They can judge it more on what it is right now, which is where I think Justin Simmons or Quandre Diggs could be. They could look at this team and be like, yeah, they kind of are like a really good veteran safety away from maybe being something very dangerous. If they're intrigued by Anthony Richardson, and they've certainly heard good things about Shane Steichen. There's a lot of other good players on this team and this defense. I think it's a fun defense to join if you're a newcomer, because they're settled at linebacker, and they've got good defensive linemen. They've got Kenny Moore. What they need is that veteran corner or veteran safety. It's the same thing that
they need defensive backs.
it's how it felt when Stephon Gilmore got here 2 years ago. So it's like, that's what's kind of weird is you have on one hand a good situation that I think is attractive to guys wanting to win and fit on a good defense if they believe in themselves to solve that issue. You have cap space to pay a market rate deal, at least one of them. It's not a cap strapped team. Why has it not happened yet? I mean, Chris Ballard is very, very patient. So it's quite possible one of these comes through, and then we're talking in a totally different way. But like, it needs to happen though. I just don't want to hear that like they didn't get Quandre Diggs or Justin Simmons or any good safety because cost ended up being the reason.
I don't have any information on the pursuit of either of those guys, and if they're pursuing beyond eyeball emojis, which is not expansive enough for me. I want more information. But to me, Justin Simmons is like the one guy left out there who, like, if they sign him, it's like, whoa, that's a big deal. Diggs, I think, is also a very good player, but there's some question with last year with him, right? About like why he fell off a little bit.
Yeah, he didn't produce last year.
The secondary I know was a mess, so that probably played a role in it. But like Simmons is a guy who is coming off of being very good again. Like he's been very good. Like the biggest question with him is just that he's 30. Like that to me. Like I just wanted to stop here and just say, like, to me, the one guy who you're like, if they sign this person, you're like, wow, that's a big one. I don't see the downsides, like the obvious downsides. It's probably Simmons. Because Diggs, I do wonder a little bit about like what, you know, like Seattle's secondary was a mess last year to some degree. But also like if he joins the Colts, based on what we know now, unless there's going to be another cornerback signing, there's some youth and so like he'd be trying to stabilize that too. So like it'd be the same situation in terms of if the rest of the inconsistency was dragging him down. Simmons still feels like he's a guy who like people were shocked when he got released.
Yeah, and he got released because of the spot the Broncos are in. Really, like it's just not a player you
really. He's doing a full teardown. It seems
they're doing a full teardown. They're
starting quarterback.
They can't win. Like the Chiefs are trying to pull every loose change out of the couch to keep Legarius Sneed or at least get the chance to trade him. Like the Broncos are doing the opposite because they're not going to win and they are in cap issues. So like it's a rare player who gets to free agency and it's not, I don't think, an indictment on anything with him. It's just the situation that they were in and they couldn't get a trade because he was on a big enough deal at the time. And teams knew that, hey, why would we trade for a guy when you're just going to have to release him anyway? So just a unique spot. But yeah, he's the one like huge needle mover. That's where it's like for them to make a sizable impact, they could eat like that. That's the one that raises the floor and the ceiling very clearly.
Yeah.
Some of these other guys we're talking about, I think are more raise the floor. Xavier Howard is much more trustworthy than Jalen Jones. I don't know if it explodes the ceiling, depends on how much he has left. Same kind of thing with Quandre Diggs. He's a lot more reliable than what they've gotten at safety, but is he still that three-time Pro Bowl player as he turns 32? I don't know. But something. So either raise the ceiling or the floor. I don't care how you do it, but
I think you have to raise the floor. I'd prefer that they raise the ceiling. Make sense?
Yeah.
We'll end here. This is the last one. This is the one we should probably talk about. There's only one Colts free agent who does not have a home, in-house free agent who does not have a home yet. It's Julian Blackmon. He started at strong safety for them last year. He started 15 games, played almost 1,000 snaps, had 4 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles, was like third, I think, on the team in tackles. His shoulder injury is not a concern going forward. Chris Ballard has said that. What we know about the safety market is that other safeties sort of in his range that market has kind of like that some of those deals have happened. I think I saw 2 years, $13.5 million on Cameron Curl, Jordan Fuller signing Carolina, correct?
Yep.
His deal was the 1 year deal worth up to $5.25 million. That's not very expensive, just not at all. I don't know exactly where Julian Blackman falls in that. I don't know where I don't have a ton of intel on what's going on with his pursuit, other than to know that as we're doing this on Wednesday, he's supposed to have visited the Bills yesterday, along with another safety, Mike Edwards, that I do know, who visited the Colts. But Blackman, it's interesting that he's not back, and I don't know. I don't really know anything about why at this point. I don't really know. If he's trying to beat those deals, if whatever. I do know that there is, I think that his medical evaluation is how a team views him medically is probably pretty important. And how the Colts view him medically is also, I think, probably pretty important to this. He's got two seasons where you saw like this guy can really play, his rookie year and last year. There's also been two seasons that were marred by injury. In 2022, he was a guy who was kind of lost in the secondary, couldn't really find a home. Some of that probably had to do with coming off of an Achilles. I think that he's got a torn ACL from back in his college days. I just think the availability is the big question, and maybe makes his contract, like what he's looking for versus what teams are offering, a little more complicated than we realize. That seems to me, with those other guys coming off the board, to be kind of the only real reason for him not to have signed somewhere yet.
Yeah, when you think through him, he's a little complicated to come down to, like, what should his value be, especially when you have a crowded safety market and teams are choosing not to value that as much as they could or have, but like
outside of McKinney, that's the only one. Xavier McKinney got a huge deal in Green Bay, and basically nobody else has.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, you can make arguments both ways for Julian. Like, on one hand, you can see how he sees this, which is like, he just had a hell of a year, and he's 25 years old. He just had a career year, and 15 games, and 4 picks, and 88 tackles, and like, big time leader, good guy off the field. Like, he, in his mind, I think he probably thinks he checks a lot of boxes for a guy who should get a big investment. The other side of it is, yeah, he said what it was, a new position. He said one big year, really. First year at that position. He does have some injuries in his past. That's what I also think is a little complicated, because projecting him forward, I understand the durability concerns when you've had two major knee injuries, and he's smaller player who makes a lot of tackles. There just seems to be a little more injury risk to him. But I could see where he comes back and says, I've played 85% of the games the past 2 years. I've been healthy 3 out of 4 years, played at least 14 games. Here's a fun fact. He's played more games the past 2 years than Kenny Moore and Grover Stewart. Obviously, we know Grover's was tied to the suspension, but he's missed fewer games to injury than Kenny Moore. And, you know, Kenny Moore doesn't have those big injuries in the past that factor into it. But Julian's 25 years old. So I don't know. I can understand why there'd be like some concerns about paying him like a ton. But it's kind of weird to me that he's the one player they didn't brought back at the position they need more than any of the other ones that they did bring guys back to. I mean, they have told us they don't believe in the guys at his position that they have in the roster. And usually when that's been the case, that was the case with Grover Stewart. Like, they didn't believe in anything they had behind him, so they went right out and, you know, gave him a nice deal. I don't know. It's maybe the best thing in the end is Julian signs a one-year deal where he can just have one more year where he proves he's still pretty durable, plays majority of the games, has another productive year at this new position, and then he's still only 26 years old, hit free agency. That's also banking on the safety market suddenly becoming more valued than it is. I don't know. It's a very weird situation. And what's tough with us is, like, at least with all the other guys, we talked to them at the end of the year and got a sense for what is sort of your outlook on free agency. Do you want to be back? We never got to have that conversation with Julian because he was hurt.
Yeah.
And so it's just been very hard to figure out. Like, it's always possible he just decided, like, he wants to try somewhere new, or he just is really confident that that one deal will come through. I don't know. It's weird, and it doesn't, I wouldn't feel great about it if I'm a Colts defender. Like, Kenny Moore has been campaigning to sign him back. It'd be one thing if you went out and got a better one. If they signed Justin Simmons, they're like, hey, that's where that money went. But the longer that they don't make a move there, when we know what their safety issue was last year around him, I don't know. It's very strange. I don't necessarily have any hot take on it, but it's strange to me when we're at the point now where they're signing back Taven Bryan, but they're not signing Julian Blackman. It's just kind of
weird. Taven Bryan, I haven't seen the details. I don't think he cost anything.
I'm sure he didn't, but
like, well, no, but like people, like, so here's the thing about when people look at it that way, like in terms of the cap, if you signed him for essentially the minimum, like if he's getting $1 million or $2 million a year, and you take into the account that like contracts get taken off of it with the top 51, it's very minimal on your cap. Whereas like Blackman, I assume, is not signing for that. So like the Colts have made some deals in this thing that like we've talked about as free agent signings, but they're not, and this is gonna be hard to explain, that they're not free agent signings in the way that like Kenny Moore or Grover Stewart or Raekwon Davis are free agent signings. They're more like the pickups that the Colts make kind of all the way through the year where they sign these veteran guys. Now, if it's more than that, if it's more like if Brian's deal is more than that, then I don't really get it. But like if we're talking about minimum deals, like they kind of make those deals in February sometimes, and sometimes they make them in June, and sometimes they make them in, I wouldn't lump those in with, you know, like an actual free agent commitment.
I guess
it doesn't really affect the cap that much in terms of how it works with the top 51. Because the contract they're kicking out of the top 51, if you're getting a very small deal, like the base, like team players get a minimum, even if they're rookies. So you're talking about like a couple $100,000 on the cap.
Yeah.
Like Jannard Avery, they didn't like go out and say, we're going to re-sign Jannard Avery before we sign anybody else. It's just, I assume they got him at a fairly minimal price.
Yeah, I think it just adds to what's got to be a weird feeling to be Julian, where it's like, how many guys in the building can we find to bring back who are not Julian Blackman? I don't know. It's, everyone's got a market value, and Taven Bryan sounds like he got his, which is probably the minimum. Maybe that's it. Maybe it comes down to like, we don't know what Julian Blackman's market value is. Maybe he has a totally different idea of it than what the Colts do or the league. Maybe that's why it's going this way. But whereas Taven Bryan doesn't affect their cap much, honestly, Julian Blackman probably wouldn't that much either. It's a much bigger deal, but like they have money they're not spending on anybody.
Yeah. I also don't know why Taven Bryan's back. I don't want to make it sound like I think that was a good idea. I don't get it.
I mean,
I don't understand.
They have to be playing him just as a three technique now that Raekwon Davis is here.
No, I don't understand that either. They really had like 500-ish snaps available for that position. Like, I could be wrong on this. 90-man rosters are so big, and you have so many guys on there. You always have veteran guys. But, like, Jannard Avery falls into this too. Like, you have Isaiah Land, you have Titus Leo, you have some of these other guys. Like, I guess I don't fully get bringing back veterans who are, I guess maybe with Jake Martin deciding to go to the Bears, you feel like you want somebody there, like, and you liked what you saw from Avery in training camp. I don't know. I guess I just don't necessarily know that those guys had to be back. They probably don't cost much, but in terms of like the roster spot, like, you can probably replace them in camp if you need to pretty easily. And Taven Bryan was not good for the Colts last year. He just wasn't. I don't know how I don't know any other way to say it. Plus, you just signed a defensive tackle who you think is going to be good based on the money you gave him and like what you told him about switching schemes, I like Danny Pinter is a little bit different because Danny Pinter is another deal that I'm assuming is not very super high cost, but you need a bunch of guys to compete for spots in the depth of the offensive line. That one I kind of get. Like, I don't know. The defensive line was already deep.
It just goes to – the only explanation I can come up with is that it goes to a feeling I've had this offseason of where they just really think that their defensive line as a whole can be better than they were last year, that each guy can get more out of what they were. And they're bringing in Charlie Partridge, you know, a guy they think can bring more out of them. I think that's the idea. I mean, Jannard Avery got hurt, but I know they were, you know, I know they were intrigued by his some of his measurables, just the juice he has. And I know they think they can get more out of Samson, Quiddy, and Dio. And so maybe that just keeps trickling down to where they think there's more to unpack from other guys too. I agree with you though. I mean, Taven Bryan's had a lot of shots at this too. So he's been on a few different teams that have tried this. So I don't know. It's you're right. It's not, my point isn't that it's not like what they did it. It's not like they choose defensive tackle over secondary. It's just the optics feel kind of odd where it's like they're still not doing things in the secondary, but they're going to that level.
The other thing with Bryan is that like you got some flashes of pass rush out of Tommy Wadabare last year at the three technique. Like,
yeah. Well, that's the thing is that that's a guy that you can talk yourself into becoming more because he was just a rookie.
I think Bryan, like this is kind of what I wrote. I haven't like asked anybody or anything yet, but like, it feels to me like the signing of Davis means that Brian's in a roster spot right now.
Yeah, I would assume so.
You know, when you think about Adebare, Eric Johnson is still there and somebody who played, who knows if they add, like they could add somebody in the back end of the back end of the draft. Like they could, there might be a couple other guys there. It feels like Davis takes over the spot that Bryan had last year, and then everybody else is in a roster fight. Kind of like Avery's going to be in a roster fight. Trey Sermon feels like he's probably in a pretty good spot right now, but, you know, if they draft a guy and Evan Hull is back and they like the way he's passing, like you could see him being on the roster bubble. Like some of those guys that they signed – kind of surprised that kind of quickly or whatever re-signed, like you could see them being on the bubble pretty easily.
Yeah, like Trey Sermon's a guy that's like, to me, he's the RB2 until he's not. Like, do they find another upgrade? Is there another running back that's better who just doesn't get a deal? Does a guy fall in the draft? But like, he showed enough last year to be, as a runner, I think guy averaged 5 yards a carry down the stretch. The only guy who could, and that was without playing with Anthony Richardson. You know, if you believe in Evan Hull to come back and be more of that third down guy, you know, that you can see the fit there. I think the one guy that's probably in a pretty decent spot with them is Ronnie Harrison, partly because they haven't signed anybody at safety. But
he's
unique to have a player who can help at both spots.
Yeah, I underestimated that. We do like a predictions thing about whether or not guys are going to be back. You could see where my brain was on some of these guys, because if you go back and look at it, I had several of the guys, like the back end guys that we're discussing now, are guys that I thought would let leave. I the one thing I think with Ronnie Harrison that I definitely didn't think about and should have is, like, you get one roster spot for really three, you know, to help you in really three spots. It helps you at linebacker, safety. It can help you on special teams. That's you know, something that is very, very valuable. And I probably should have seen that. Plus Gus Bradley made it really clear that he liked Ronnie Harrison a lot last year. And so that's something that I probably should have taken into account more when I was making those predictions. Not that predictions on free agency are that.
Yeah. And it's a story I never got around to on Ronnie, because I ended up pulling the quote when he signed. But like at the end of the year, he just was glowing about the Colts, like wanted so badly to be back here. And part of it is, you know, obviously you'll take the money and a job, but like he felt something with them where he feared that like the whole league had moved on from him and he wasn't going to get a deal anymore. And one team came through and was like, how would you try a linebacker? And they kind of sold him on it, and they helped him develop there. And then they still believed in him enough as a safety to fill in there. And so the fit was just really good there. And so I didn't thought enough about it either until he signed. And I'm like, well, actually that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And, yeah. The flexibility from a roster standpoint is pretty rare. Like usually when we talk about roster flexibility, it's like with Ashton Doolin, you get a guy who can play wide receiver for you and also is your gunner. Like you're usually talking about like the position and special teams. Ronnie Harrison literally can fill two different positions for you with one roster spot.
Yeah, and that'll give him the chance to potentially carry an extra pass rusher, wide receiver. You know, those spots that really tend to stress teams out as they're making cuts. You know, I've thought about like when they need a backup wide receiver, like I've thought they probably should look to a guy who could play inside or outside rather than get two. But if you have an extra spot, you don't have to necessarily think that way. So could be a sneaky move.
We'll see. We'll find out here in the coming weeks whether or not the Colts will address their very obvious hole in the secondary. It's big. It's large. It's large. Julian Blackman not being back leaves a large starting hole. He was their most consistent playmaker last year in the secondary. Like everyone said that. Everybody from Ballard on down through the roster like said that he was their most consistent playmaker in the secondary last year. They have guys who can play strong. Like Nick Cross can play strong safety, but if you move Nick Cross, then like you said, you're counting on Rodney Thomas, who you took out of that role and wouldn't put back there in the last two games of the season. Like, it's a huge hole at safety right now. And you and I have already said this many, many times, but there's also a needed corner. So we'll see. We'll see if they make additions. They still have time. They have made additions in the past in this situation. But the need is, it's just too obvious to ignore. It's going into this season next year and hoping for what happened with the offensive line last year, it's not the same situation, because even hoping for what you hoped for with the offensive line last year, you were counting on guys who've been proven in the past. Mm-hmm. Like you had Quentin Nelson, you had Ryan Kelly, you had Braden Smith. 3/5 of the line last year were guys who, you know, to varying levels had a dip, but you felt like could still play that way again because you'd seen it before. There's only one guy on the secondary as constructed right now who's that, who you feel like you can count on. It's Kenny Moore. That's it. That's the only one.
And it's a good comparison, not to make this podcast go forever, but I wonder if the plan they end up rolling out is to just roll back what they've got, give them an extra year, let them develop. I hope they're not making that connection to, well, it worked in the offensive line because of all the reasons you said. That was a very experienced group. Also, there's only one spot on that line that I really thought they might change, which was right guard, because they were going to give Bernard Raimann that chance. And then they had those three other veterans that I guess they could have found a way to move on from Ryan Kelly maybe, but the likelihood was they were going to let them bounce back and fix the holes around them. There's not that kind of argument to make here. There were two out of five spots in the secondary. There were two veterans that you could say, we'll bring them back and be happy with them. They brought back one. So there's four other spots. So far.
One of the reasons we keep saying so far on this is because both of us, I think, are like, there's just no way that they don't do anything else. I mean, well, there is a way in the out that he's done this before. You are correct. It just doesn't feel to me or Nate, or probably to you guys out there listening, that there's any way that they somehow get to like the draft and we're still talking about how this is the situation in the secondary. It just doesn't seem it's such a bad idea. It's such a bad idea. Like, because the floor right now is so low, and signing a couple veterans who you don't have to necessarily start. Like if you come back into camp next year and you've signed guys to contracts, and then all of a sudden, all of your young players look like Pro Bowlers. Who cares if you don't play the other guy very much or play him in a rotation?
No, imagine compared to last year. This year, the next thing we're talking about is, oh, they have too many DBs. Man, how are they going to get all these good corners on the field? I hope we're in that spot, and you should hope too.
Ultimately,
just real quick, a guy like Shaquille Griffin, I thought, I mean, he's not a superstar, but just signed for $6 million. That could have been a guy you bring in to have something. There's guys
ultimately, what you just said is my biggest issue with, well, not my biggest, but it's one of my big issues with the way Ballard has operated is that, like, I think that as an NFL team, you should go into a season going, we need to upgrade here, and we've given ourselves multiple ways and we can do that, in which we can do that, whether it's multiple draft picks or a free agent and a draft pick, whatever. Like, that's how I view roster building, is if you need something, you should add multiples in case one of them doesn't work out, especially knowing that drafted players maybe are not going to be finished products as rookies. In fact, they're not going to be finished products as rookies. There are too many times in Ballard's history that he's been willing to just go, well, I hope these young guys are going to develop. And I will give this to him. It has worked out more times than I thought it would. It has also blown up in his face. And I just don't think they should do it. So that's where I'm coming from with the secondary. It's just, you need to be better there. And I know you know it. You already said it. Like, raise the floor. Make there be multiple options. At the very least, raise the floor. I would prefer that it's Justin Simmons and you raise the ceiling. But at the very minimum, raise the floor of the secondary by adding experience. And if you want to add people in the draft, you can still do that. Like,
yeah,
guys are going to get hurt. Those guys are going to end up playing anyway. Whatever. Like, if they don't, who cares if they got beat out by a better player? Like, just raise that floor. At the bare minimum, raise the floor of the secondary.
And that floor ceiling, I like that you framed it that way, because that really is what it comes down to, is my preference too. I love adding DBs. My thing would be, let's really go at it and let's raise the ceiling so that you can get into the playoffs. And if Anthony explodes the way that you hope and the offense is great, you have those guys who can go toe-to-toe with the Bengals or the Chiefs or the Bills or these high-flying teams. But at the very least, you got to raise the floor, because it is such an important position that it will, if they whiff on the floor, it'll undo everything else in that unit. It's like left tackle to me. 2 years ago, it really didn't matter if Matt Ryan had arm left with what they were doing at left tackle. It didn't matter if they got, young receivers to play well. Like, if they couldn't block anybody around their statue quarterback, it was never going to work. And this year, I think it's similar of, if you cannot guard anybody on the outside or deep, it's kind of, all of a sudden, that's where I would start to shrug off. You brought back, you signed Zaire Franklin and Kenny Moore and Grover Stewart. Those are good signings if they have a chance to be good signings, which means you need a four in the secondary.
We can keep going round and round on this, but I think we'll probably end it here. It's been a long pod, but I do like
that. If we don't make any moves, we can just keep doing this every week.
That's true. Any angry thoughts that we didn't just get out in the last 10 or 12 minutes here at the end of it, if they don't sign anybody, we can do it again next week. So for the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel Erickson. This has been Nate Ackett. Nate's going to the owners' meetings next week. He should have some information. I think, like, next week's pod, as much as we just joked about it, there's going to be some stuff from Nate on, like, what he's learned about what the team is at least saying. And that's usually helpful at this point in the year. But for the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. Yes, we think they need secondary help. We promise we do.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.